Well, welcome back to A&M Commerce. Welcome back to our Commerce. It's great to see you all here. We've simplified our program a little bit this morning. It's kind of like going to Express Mass. Okay, we want to get you in and out quickly. So, before we get started, let me remind you that depending on when we finish, a few minutes after we finish here, the Pride Walk will take place right outside. And those of you who have not participated in the Pride Walk before, it's a lot of fun. This is when all of us line up on both sides of the sidewalk and cheer on as our freshman students come in for the freshman convocation here in this room at 11 o'clock. And they get a lot out of it, and we get a lot out of it. It's also fortunate that it's not 105 degrees today like it was last year. So we do have ambulances on call, but I don't think we're going to need to use them. Well, anyway, let me introduce myself for those of you who are new to campus. My name is Dan Jones, the president of A&M Commerce, and it's a great pleasure to welcome all of you back to the first time or back to campus. I don't know about you, but the beginning of an academic year always feels to me like the beginning of baseball season. We've been in training, we've been working on our batting and our pitching and our fielding, and we have a perfect record, right? We haven't lost a game yet. Everything points to a winning season. Well, a winning season starts with a winning team. And this fall, we are pleased to welcome close to 100 new members to our university community. In the past, we used to actually introduce all of these folks, but that's when we didn't have 100 to introduce. We might have 15 or 20. So we're not going to take time to introduce them today because we wouldn't get out of here until after lunchtime, and no one wants that to happen. But I would like to ask our new members, our new faculty and staff, to please stand and be recognized if you're here today. You guys look great, and we are so glad that you've come to our campus and to our community. I would like to invite you, remind you also that the entire presentation is going to be on the website, including the names of all of our new employees. So if you would, after the presentation or at your leisure, visit the website and you can meet our new colleagues there. One appointment, however, does merit a special announcement, and that is in addition to the president's office team. As you know, Marsha Lehr, the long-serving, faithful, patient, dedicated, tireless, and somewhat mischievous executive assistant to the president, retired earlier this month. Those of you who are new to the campus did not have the luxury and the privilege of knowing Marsha. Everyone else did. And she started working here in 1977, working first as a secretary in the math department under Dr. Dale Bedgood. She then went to work for Dr. Keith McFarland in the graduate school, and basically stayed with him through the remainder of his career until he retired as president in 2008. So since 2008, she has been my executive assistant. Marsha knew everybody, knew where all the knowledge was filed and all the bodies were hidden. So we're going to miss her, but she's got a lot of photos, so be careful, all right? Don't cross her if you see her at Walmart. Marsha's position, the position she was in, retired with her, and she will be replaced with a familiar face serving in a new role. On September 1st, Alicia Curran will move to the president's office in the newly created position of Chief of Staff and Director of Planning and Governmental Relations. She is already a tremendous asset to the university and will be a great addition to the president's office team. And Alicia, if you were here, could you please stand? There she is. I would also like to recognize another long-serving faculty member who will be retiring at the end of the month, just a few days from now, Dr. Sandy Weeks. Sandy has been with the university for an amazing 43 years as a faculty member in the College of Education and Human Services and currently as an associate provost. Sandy, we thank you. We will miss you. We wish you well, and I'm hoping for an invitation to go fishing with you and James in the near future. Sandy, could you rise and let us show our appreciation? I would also like to pause and remember some proud members of the Lyon family whom we lost this year. Just recently, last week, in fact, we lost Gary Burton, Associate Professor of Mass Media, Communication, and Theater, and also Theater Director. Mr. Bob Aiken, an alumnus, an employee. You may have heard Bobby Aiken's show on KETR. He knew everything about everything and had an opinion about most of it. He was a true raconteur, and he was just a delightful man. Dr. Otha Spencer, Professor Emeritus of Journalism, who came to the university in the 50s and really created our photojournalism department, the author of dozens, if not hundreds of books and articles, an astounding man who maintained his engagement with the university up until the very end. And Ron Newsom, alumnus, coach, longtime president of the Lyon Athletic Association, friend and mentor to many students, student athletes, and now people who are well along in their professional careers. We miss all of them. Well, contrary to popular belief, summer is not a quiet time on a university campus. Those of you who have been on campus teaching courses this summer know how important it is for students to have their opportunity to continue their education during the summer months, especially in certain programs such as teacher certification and teacher training. And while there may be fewer college students on campus, we still have a lot of folks around. This summer, we welcomed a group of students from Namsol University in Korea with whom we are forming a partnership. They were here to take part in a special certificate program in computer science. We'll be receiving another group of students from Namsol next year in credit-bearing programs. For the ninth summer in a row, we hosted a group of 350 young Chinese students who are participants in the Chinese Youth Leadership Camp. And of course, there was a continuing stream of young people taking part in one of our many athletic and activity camps, soccer camp, basketball camp, equine camp, the list just goes on and on. Combine those with all of the orientation programs that started in the late spring, early summer, and you can see how the campus of Texas A&M University Commerce is a very busy place during the summer months. Some of the busiest folks on campus have been those in physical plant, as well as a lot of contractors. If you've been away from campus since May, you're seeing for the first time some tremendous improvements to campus. Take a look at the new main entrance to the campus. Quite a difference from the old red brick gate that used to frame this entrance, which actually diminished in size a couple of years ago when a car ran into it and took about half of one side out. So it wasn't getting any better looking. Once you pass through the entrance, you'll be driving on a completely rebuilt University Drive. They actually went in and scraped off all the several layers of asphalt. That street, before it was repaved, was actually about a foot higher than it was originally because it had been overlaid so many times. But now it's completely rebuilt with sidewalks on both sides and terminating at the newest extension of the walking mall. And I just saw the construction fencing coming down this morning, so I believe that is now officially open. Throughout campus, as well as around the perimeter of campus, we have new signs that provide both better wayfinding assistance for visitors to our campus, but they also help define a sense of campus place and presence. It just helps this seem more like a campus. You know when you're coming onto the campus, you know when you're leaving it. South of the field house and adjacent to the BA building, a beautiful new outdoor amphitheater is nearly complete. This spectacular new facility complements Rachel's Garden, the memorial sculpture and water feature that was dedicated last spring. Together, these two new additions will serve as a focal point and an anchor for the north side of campus. The amphitheater will provide a perfect setting for hosting entertainers at tailgate parties, as well as dramatic literary and musical performances of all kinds. The permanent raised stage will feature full electrical connections, and visitors will have easy and convenient access to the music building, Memorial Stadium, and the field house. The amphitheater is available for scheduling now. In fact, I think it's already getting booked. So please contact the staff in the Sam Rayburn Student Center for information on how to reserve it. We want this to be a busy place, and we know that it will be. As you have by now no doubt noticed, Ferguson Auditorium, where we are currently placed, has received a much-needed makeover with new seats, carpeting, and paint. A new ag arena is rising quickly at the University Farm on Highway 24, and this facility will provide the foundation for the continued growth of our equine program, and indeed will support growth in all of our programs in agriculture. Those of you who like to eat in the Sam Rayburn Student Center have noticed that it's getting a bit crowded, harder and harder to find a place to sit. That's because a dining facility that was designed to serve 1,250 residential students is now serving an on-campus population approaching 2,000 and still rising. In fact, we expect to be close to 3,000 students within the next 3 to 5 years. This year, we went to all-day dining in an attempt to spread out the demand, but what we really need is more space. We have a proposal pending at the system to more than double the size of the dining area. Here's a rendering of what the new space will look like. The little yellow arrow there points to where the current exterior wall now stands. If approved in spring at the February board meeting, the expansion will be complete by fall 2014. Perhaps the most exciting campus improvement going on right now is the beginning of construction on phase two of our residence life expansion. This spring, several of the old West Hall apartment buildings were demolished, as was Cowling Hall. These buildings had outlived their design life and needed to come down. In their place will be a 540-bed residence hall. This new residence hall will have the same look and feel as Pride Rock, but will be twice its size. Once it opens in the fall of 2013, just about a year from now, we will be able to require both freshmen and sophomores to live on campus, a practice that we know leads to better retention, higher grade point averages, and shorter time to graduation. Having more students on campus promotes engagement and success, and just makes the campus a more lively and fun place to be. With all of the changes to our campus, we decided now would be a good time to revisit our master plan. The master plan is only about 6 or 7 years old, but we're already departing from it in fairly significant ways. An architectural firm has been selected, and meetings with members of the campus community will begin this fall. Many of you will be involved in those meetings, and I ask you to participate and encourage you to share your hopes and dreams for the future of what you think our campus should look like 10, 20, 30 years from now. This fall, one of our most beautiful and most advanced buildings will have a new name. At the August meeting of the Texas A&M University System Board of Regents, approval was given to name the Science Building in honor of our 10th president, Dr. Keith D. McFarland. Dr. McFarland came to then East Texas State University in 1969 as an assistant professor of history. He told me once that he planned to stay a year or two and then move on. I've heard that a lot. Well, he spent his entire career at the university in a variety of leadership positions and the last 10 years in the office of the president. This naming is a richly deserved honor for Dr. McFarland. We will recognize Keith at a special ceremony to be held later this fall. While growth on campus is healthy, we're also growing in other locations. This month, the university entered into a 5-year agreement to lease a 25,000-square-foot facility in Rockwall. Some of you have seen, may have seen a very nice article about this in Monday's Dallas Morning News. It's not often that we make the Dallas Morning News, and it's even more seldom that we make the Dallas Morning News with good news. But this was. It was a very nice article. The building is located on the eastern side of the city in the Rockwall Technology Park. Great parking, by the way. It will house 8 classrooms and a number of offices. It will be easily accessible from I-30. In fact, if you stretch your neck just a little bit, you'll be able to see the sign, Texas A&M, not yet, but we're going to have Texas A&M University Commerce sign that will be visible from I-30. Overall, the location is much more convenient and much more visible and much more easily accessible than our current location at the Rockwall Independent School District Administration Building. We've been in Rockwall since 2001. We started small, but we're growing. As you know, the Rockwall community is growing. This is a perfect opportunity for us to expand our footprint. And we will plan to start offering classes there in January. One of our most successful and longest-running partnerships is the one we enjoy with Navarro College. This program is essentially an on-site 2+2 arrangement. It was begun at Navarro's main campus in Corsicana in 1999 and was extended to Midlothian when Navarro opened its campus there in 2006. This spring, the Midlothian program was approved as the newest multi-institution teaching center, or MITSE for short, in the state of Texas. It was about a two-year process to get this approval through the system, through a number of systems. Two additional partners, Tarleton State University and UNT Dallas, have joined with Navarro and A&M Commerce to form the Midlothian Higher Education Center. In addition to the four programs that we currently offer there, students will now have even more options for completing their education without having to leave home or drive great distances. We anticipate continued success in Midlothian, where we expect to continue growing along with this growing community for many years to come. Well, you know, I keep reminding you, and some of you are actually believing me now when I say that growth is a good thing for the campus, for the university. But as I've said before, and I'll say today, it has to be high-quality growth done in the right way and for the right reasons. And all of these things are happening here at our university. The central challenge that comes with growth is that the resources to accommodate all these new students always come after the growth itself occurs. Still, these kinds of problems are good problems to have. They're much better than the other kind, which is trying to explain to our leadership in Austin and College Station why students seem to be going someplace else. They're not. They're coming here. Here's a snapshot of our fall enrollment numbers. We are well on pace to reach another record enrollment this fall, which, if that occurs, and we believe it will be the third year in a row that we have achieved this milestone. Look at the gap between headcount and semester credit hours overall. This is another good sign. It means that we are continuing a trend of high-quality growth, which in this case is measured along two dimensions. More students, with each, on average, taking more hours. Put another way, we have more students taking full course loads, or at least heavier course loads, all of which points to better retention, shorter time to degree, and improved graduation rates. When it comes to performance-based funding, these are the things that count. But even more important, these are the things that matter most for our students. Getting a degree in the shortest time possible means less debt and the opportunity to start earning a paycheck that just that much sooner. This growth has helped with our paychecks as well. This fall, we will be implementing a merit pay plan for the sixth year in a row, a record that is matched by very few public institutions of higher education in Texas. In fact, I know of no other institution in the state that has been able to maintain this trend. This year's merit pool was $1.6 million, and those of you who have earned raises will see them reflected in your October 1st paycheck. And you did earn them, and you deserve them. Congratulations, you made this possible. Since growth has been one of our few constants, we've had to adapt quickly. 2 years ago, when our enrollment growth was well into the double digits, we were faced with bulging classrooms, crowded schedules, and heavy teaching loads. I will be forever grateful for the way that all of you responded. It was wearing on us all, but that growth generated new resources and new opportunity. Most of those new resources were invested in new faculty lines. the money finally showed up. You know, we're in Texas, we're on a biennial budget, so the money shows up 2 years after you need it. But it showed up in the budget last year, and you immediately set about putting it to work. That's also about the time that Dr. Edward Romero, our chief diversity officer, arrived on campus with a mandate to improve our hiring practices and processes and to promote diversity across campus. Dr. Romero will be the first to tell you that this has been a very busy year for him, with his office involved in 88 searches for faculty and professional staff. These searches have yielded 70 new employees, with 18 searches still underway. Many of you have been involved in conducting these searches. Thank you for your tireless efforts in recruiting top quality new faculty and staff. The reports I have been receiving are that our recruiting pools are strong and we have a growing reputation as a place that people want to be a part of. In fact, I've heard that some of our faculty searches attracted well over 100 candidates per position. So we must be doing something right. It's all because of you. You are the stewards of excellence. It is because of your dedication, your achievements, and your spirit of service and pride that people want to come to Texas A&M University Commerce. We begin the new academic year with a new title for Dr. Romero. As I mentioned, he is now the Chief Diversity Officer and Director of the Office of Institutional Diversity and Equity. Just for as you can clearly see from this slide, we have tried to designate precise roles for human resources and for the Office of Institutional Diversity and Equity. Don't try to read this now. It will be on the website. I would encourage you to spend a few minutes so that you will have a good sense of which office you need to go to get questions answered and to deal with other kinds of employment issues. Another quick announcement. Beginning this fall, the university will no longer retain emails on its server for more than 120 days. Our current practice is never to delete anything, ever, which is a little frightening when you think about it. That means that every email you sent to a friend asking them to go to lunch with you, or every joke that you forwarded on, or every photograph of your puppy, or whatever it is, it's all still there resident on the server. Well, by moving in this direction, we'll come much more closely into alignment with both the state records retention policy and also just standard industry practice in the electronic age. We're going to phase this in slowly over several months' time, with the oldest messages being deleted first, and then by the end of December, we'll be at the 120-day mark. We chose 120 days because that's just a little bit longer than a semester, and sometimes messages coming and going to students might contain assignments in them and so forth that you want to go back and retrieve. Now, you can still save emails on your own computer, although I don't particularly recommend it, but they won't be saved on the server after the end of December. At this time, I'd like to take a moment to thank our bridge builders, and many of you in this room are bridge builders, those of you who support our employee giving program. During these times of fiscal constraint, it is more important than ever for our university to attract funding from sources other than public sources, state appropriations, and other than from our students. As you see, 24% of our funding comes from some other source. That 24% includes auxiliary funds generated through business operations, investment earnings, a variety of sources, but it also includes private giving. Our reliance on this segment continues to grow. This year we have 323 bridge builders, and we'd like to increase that number to at least 388 during the coming year. For information on how to participate in Bridge Builders, your contact is Stephanie Fiorosi, and her information is on the slide. I'd also, there have been some changes in the advancement staff. I'd also like to give you a quick snapshot both of how your giving impacts students' lives and also introduce you to the members of our development office team. And now, on to everybody's favorite four-letter word, sax. Sax, I said, sax. As you all know, or soon will know, and by the way, you're already employed here, so you can't leave now, we are in the midst of preparing for our SACS reaffirmation of accreditation, both the compliance report and the visit. The site visit will not take place until spring 2014. Seems like a long ways away. It's not. It's right around the corner, and we are very much into the process. Our complete compliance audit must be submitted 1 year from now, with the off-site review conducted later next fall. The way the process works is the compliance report is submitted to the SACS office, and then it is reviewed off-site, usually at a meeting in Atlanta, by a team. We're not present for that review. During the site visit, when the team actually comes to visit our campus in the spring of 2014, the focus is entirely on the quality enhancement plan. Much has been done, but much more remains. This is an effort that engages every member of the university community. If you are asked to provide documentation or to serve on a committee or to improve the learning outcomes on your syllabus, please step forward. This is important stuff. Remember, accreditation is not the responsibility of the Office of Institutional Effectiveness and Planning. They're simply the ones that gather all the stuff and put it together. It is the responsibility of all of us. My message to you this morning would not be complete without giving you a quick update on the upcoming 83rd legislature. We're always either in a session or recovering from a session or getting ready for a session. And right now, we're getting ready for a session. As a public institution, our budget is tied directly to the health of the state's economy. As you know, during the last session, the legislature faced the daunting task of writing a budget in the face of a projected shortfall in state revenue of some $27 billion. It was not an easy job, and one that could not be accomplished in part with deep cuts alone. These cuts, though, were severe. They hurt both public education and higher education. Things do look a little bit better this time around. If you track these data, you know that sales tax revenues are up, collections are up, fee receipts are up at the state level. They are up at levels which are exceeding the comptroller's projections. The rainy day fund is growing, as are taxes, tax royalties on revenues from oil and gas. So some things are looking good. However, don't get the sense that we're getting back to normal. In fact, just kind of forget about the whole idea of normal, okay? We're not going to have normal for a long time. Because of the loss of federal stimulus dollars, total state revenues are flat. And the budget that was written during the last session left some deep holes that still must be filled. These are those accounting tricks, like not funding the 24th month of the biennium, you know, stuff like that. These shortfalls will have to be addressed by a supplemental appropriations bill immediately when the legislature convenes. For the long term, the cost of one of the biggest ticket items in the budget, Medicaid, continues to escalate at levels which outstrip by a considerable margin the amount of revenue available to fund them. In addition, enrollments in public education and higher education continue to grow. You can only continue to grow so long if you don't have money to teach the students. You know, at some point, the quality line and the resource line cross, going in opposite directions. It's a truism that the next session, whenever it is always going to be the most difficult one in history. It's always true. So it'll be a bumpy ride, but one that will be, well, it's kind of like the Olympics, you know, if you watch the boxing. The process begins, actually it's already begun, but we make our first presentation to the Legislative Budget Board in early September. In our presentation, which is called our Legislative Appropriations Request, or LAR, here's what we're going to be asking for. $5 million to fund our BS program in nursing, now in the final stages of approval, we believe. We're going to ask for a special appropriation of $2.25 million to develop the Texas Affordable Baccalaureate Degree Program, which we're already working on in collaboration with the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board and with South Texas College with a $1 million grant. $1 million is good startup funding, but to do the whole project is going to take a little bit more. Very exciting project. I'm not going to take time today to talk about it, but this is truly innovative, truly groundbreaking, truly revolutionary, and truly frightening. It's the kind of thing that we're all in with it now, and we're going to have to make it work. On the facilities side, we're asking for these are tuition revenue bonds, TRBs. We're asking for debt service on a $45 million library and technology center. I think the current state of thinking is that we just want to build a new building rather than try to renovate the one we have. We can take the library we have now, convert it for classroom and office space. Be a simple conversion. It's basically a big building with a lot of room in it. But then build a real state-of-the-art library that has all of the technology and all of the design features that support learning in the electronic age. And $20.25 million, again, authority for debt service to fund a new general classroom building, which we desperately need. Will we get all of this? No, we will not get all of this. But we hope to get some of it. But everything that is on this list is well warranted by the quality of the work that goes on here and the continually robust growth that we are experiencing. The late Prime Minister of Israel, Golda Meir, once said that a new set of problems is like a vacation. That being the case, we may be on vacation for some time. Our university continues to grow and evolve. The life-changing opportunities we provide to our students have never been more important than they are today. H.G. Wells said it best. I may have shared this quotation with you before. History is a race between education and catastrophe. It's never sure which one is going to win out. This is not hyperbole. If we do not serve our students well, they will not serve the future well. Yet the way forward for our university in the current environment is never straight and never clearly marked. The competition for scarce resources is intense, and both the economic and political environments are perilous and ever-shifting. Higher education continues to be viewed as wasteful and inefficient, yet it is simultaneously seen as critically important to economic development and essential to the creation and sustenance of an informed citizenry, without which our democratic way of life would collapse. Given the welter of competing, even conflicting values and demands, it is easy for us to feel self-righteous. No one understands. Or embattled. We're under siege. Or worst of all, cynical. All of these mindsets are understandable, but none will take us where we need to be. Nor am I suggesting that we feign unwarranted optimism. We do face real challenges. These are difficult times. Difficult times demand serious engagement. Perhaps no challenge that we face is more pressing than the crisis of confidence in higher education that exists in this state and increasingly in this nation. I know that this has been a constant theme of mine when we come together at this time each fall, and I can assure you that it's not getting any better. In fact, the level of skepticism about the worth of our enterprise continues to grow in depth and intensity with each passing day. What began as a reasoned conversation about efficiency and productivity has in some instances morphed into a virulent strain of anti-intellectualism. Influential, incredible leaders are challenging the worth of a college education, suggesting that many young people would do better to avoid debt and enter the workforce as soon as possible. In a recent conversation about whether Texas would benefit by having another Tier 1 research-intensive university, a prominent politician sneered, "We don't need another Berkeley in Texas." This is not a debate which we can casually dismiss. Rather, it is one to which we must meaningfully contribute. I understand that minds that can't be changed won't be changed. Still, I ask each of you to consider how we may best demonstrate the worth of what we do to the people whom we serve. I wish that this worth were as self-evident to our leaders and to our citizens at large as it is to us, but it is not. We know that our students are better. They are better prepared. They are better people for the time that they spend in the halls of a college or university. How can we best prove this to those who support our work? Among that number are many who themselves have not had the benefit of a college education. How may we engage them in meaningful conversation about the value of an experience of which they have no firsthand knowledge? We live in an era of diminished trust in all public institutions. Our job is to restore that trust by producing valued and meaningful outcomes. And by outcomes, air quotes here, I don't mean scores on assessment instruments. I mean graduates who are prepared to flourish beginning on day one in their personal and professional lives, and who will make the world in which they live a better place. I'd like to share some photographs with you of some of these, quote, outcomes. This summer, like every summer, a number of A&M Commerce students traveled abroad and had life-changing experiences. Here's a guy you either know or need to meet, Dr. Kenneth Rock Clinton. It's right over here. Wake up, Rock. Who has been organizing study abroad programs for our faculty and students for longer than most of us have been part of this university. In fact, longer than some of us have been on the face of the earth. Not me, but some of our younger faculty. In our summer British studies program, Rock took 24 students and 3 faculty members on a trip that they will remember forever. Here are some of our students at the European Union Parliament in Brussels. Here they are touring the Landover factory outside of Birmingham, visiting the Charleston Football Club, soccer to us. Here they are at the oldest iron bridge in the world. Here they are visiting the National Maritime Museum in Greenwich. And here they are at the site of the German bunkers on the beaches at Normandy. These students' lives will be changed forever by actually standing on the site of one of the most decisive battles in the history of the world, a battle that before they had known only through reading history books. Rock has also been busy with another new and highly successful international program, our 1+3 partnership with Konkuk University in Seoul, South Korea. Last January, we welcomed 149 young Korean students to Commerce, and 134 are registered so far this fall. I believe they're arriving today and tomorrow. Many of you have seen these delightful young men and women around campus. I bump into them at Walmart all the time. They are truly wonderful young people. They contribute to our university community. They contribute to our tax base in the city of Commerce. And we look forward to welcoming more students from Konkuk in the future. This university began as East Texas Normal College with a mission to change the world through education. In 1889, this meant training teachers to fill the classrooms of Northeast Texas. Today, we still train teachers. We train principals, superintendents, counselors, coaches, band directors. If you grew up anywhere in Texas, but especially if you grew up in this part of the world, you were taught by at least one and probably many of our graduates. But today, we also prepare social workers, scientists, engineers, writers, musicians, artists, and professionals in 100 other fields. But one thing has not changed since 1889. We are still changing the world through education, and we're doing it one student and one family at a time. Last evening, I came home feeling a little beat up. It had been kind of a bruising day, and all of you have those at one time or another. I had one yesterday. I kind of slunk into the kitchen where my beautiful Italian wife, Jelena, who's right here, Jelena, hi, was preparing my favorite meal, chalupas, you know, the Italian style. She looked up and I think kind of read the weariness in my face and said, "Honey, go to Walmart." I said, "What? 5:30? That's not what I want." "Well, okay, all right, I'm not going to argue. But Walmart, now? I mean, what could we need badly enough so as to intrude on my own feelings of self-pity?" "Well, we need white grape juice, the kind that our daughter likes, Aislinn, and we need trash bags, and we need them now." Well, this didn't seem like an emergency, but I have been married long enough to recognize that not all emergencies are ones that I recognize. She also said that dinner wouldn't be ready for a few minutes, and I had plenty of time. So, yes, ma'am, I'll go. So, walked out into the driveway, I started up my truck, and I began the long and arduous drive to Walmart, which is about 90 seconds from the house. But anyway, as I approached Culver, I glanced to my right, and I saw the marching band practicing for its first performance at our first game here in just a couple of weeks. I pulled over and I listened to them play, and they were playing the alma mater. There was a cool breeze mingling with a sense of excitement about the upcoming season in the air. Well, the memory of my bad day started to recede somewhat. But then I got to Walmart. Parking lot was so crowded, the feelings of dread returned, and I almost turned around, but I couldn't go home without the grape juice, or especially without the trash bags. But then I got into the store, and I saw it, and I saw why I was there. The store was full of mothers and fathers, sisters, brothers, cousins, grandmas and grandpas, pushing baskets overflowing with microwaves and chicken nuggets, bed sheets, Clearasil, you know, all the things that college students need to stock up on to fill their dorm rooms. It was move-in day yesterday on campus, and I learned walking through the store that move-in day is not all about just lugging furniture and televisions that are too big for dorm rooms into elevators that are too small to carry them. Move-in day is really about moving ahead. It's about these families pursuing their dream of sending their children to college. It's a dream that we all share, a world made better by the force of education. And last night, in the middle of Walmart, I realized that that is the reason we come together at the beginning of the semester every year. Thank you for sharing the dream, and thank you for being here today. We will close by sharing with you a beautiful video that our wizards in the marketing communications department have prepared. This is available on the website. You can download it and use it in your own presentations. Remember that after that, please join me outside as we cheer on our new students and our annual Pride Walk. And please be sure to pick up a schedule of all of the creative activities that are going on this fall in the College of Humanities and Social Sciences and Arts right outside the door. Again, thank you and have a great semester.
Since 1889, we've been defined by our ceaseless industry, fearless investigation, unfettered thought, and unselfish service to others. That is our legacy at Texas A&M University, Commerce.